Good evening, everyone. Thank you. Thank you for coming in today. If everybody can settle down, I think we can get started. Okay, good evening, everyone. Thank you. Thank you for joining us today here in person. And quite a few you have joined us virtually as well. I'm Utkarsh. I lead the investor relations for Glenmark Pharmaceuticals Limited. And on behalf of the management, I welcome you all to the 2024 Investor Day. It gives me great pleasure to meeting you again after a couple of years since we last did our last Investor Day in November 22. I think, as we mentioned in our recent interactions, the last year has been a transitionary year for the company, and today the management is here to provide a more detailed outlook on the future and some key priorities for the organization as we move forward. There will be an opportunity to interact with the management team during the Q&A session, which is following the completion of the presentation. So participants who are joining us virtually, please ask your questions through the question box or the chat box. A quick and kind request to everybody present here in the room, please keep your cell phones and all other devices on silent mode so that it does not disturb the presenters. Before we start, just a reminder that the document and discussion today will comprise of certain forward-looking statements which will concern the company's plans, objectives, strategies. These are obviously based on current expectations, forecasts, and assumptions that are subject to risks and uncertainties, and actual outcomes may vary. So the document should not be regarded as a substitute for the receiver's judgment. Just a disclaimer before we start. In terms of our agenda today, so we have from our management team, Glenn Saldanha, Chairman and Managing Director. Glenn will cover Glenmark's journey up until today and the strategic outlook for the future for the organization. Christoph Stoller, he heads our Europe and Emerging Markets business. He will cover all four key geographic regions of Glenmark in more detail, including our current presence and our future growth drivers. Cyril Konto is the President and CEO of Ichnos Glenmark Innovation, or IGI. He'll walk us through our pipeline on the innovative assets and our roadmap for IGI. And VS Money is Executive Director and Global CFO. He'll take us through the various measures the company has taken to strengthen the balance sheet, to strengthen the organization, and some long-term targets for the company. As mentioned before, post the presentation, we'll have a Q&A session. So the four speakers will be joined by Ashish Mukhiwar, Group Vice President and Head of Corporate Strategy, for the Q&A session as well. With this, I would like to invite Glenn Saldanha, Chairman and Managing Director, on the stage to start the presentation.
Good evening, friends, and welcome to the Glenmark Investor Day presentation. So I want to start by saying, you know, our vision for Glenmark has always been to be a leading research-based global pharmaceutical organization. If you look at where we are today, we are about $1.5 billion in revenues. We have 10 manufacturing facilities. About 60% of our contribution comes from our branded markets. 80 countries, so very broad global presence, footprint in many countries, 4 research facilities. And we are focused on 3 therapeutic areas globally. So we work in dermatology, respiratory, and oncology. In India, we also have cardiovascular, which is a big segment, and diabetes, but our global presence is in these 3 therapeutic areas. We are unique in that we have over $300 million that we've earned in out-licensing income through our NMEs. And today we have 4 innovative clinical assets in development, mainly under IGI, which Cyril will cover, about 15,000 employees worldwide. So that's the footprint today. If you look at Glenmark, you know, So I've been running Glenmark now 25 years, right? And the last 5-6 years were super challenging for us because we got hit with 4 or 5 different areas, right? The first was, you know, the slowdown in the U.S. generics business. Clearly, the U.S. generics over the last 5-6 years was very challenging and continues to remain a challenging environment. Glenmark's approach to working around that was to enhance our branded capabilities and strengthen our branded business, which we did pretty successfully. We launched Ryaltris, which is our first global branded product, which today is a very strong brand for Glenmark and growing from strength to strength every year. And we initiated some in-licensing activities of branded products to move up the value chain. The second area which adversely impacted us over the last 5-6 years was the whole USFDA adverse audits that we faced in some of our sites, right? Today we've pretty much done with all the remediation work in both Monroe and Goa, and we're waiting for the FDA to come and re-inspect. Also, over the last couple of years, we've totally overhauled our entire quality organizations, invested heavily in building systems through the quality area, and of course, strengthened management oversight. So that's a big area which we've addressed, and I think going forward, we should come out stronger. The third area which hit us pretty badly was, you know, we were spending a lot of money on innovation. Clearly, we are the poster child of innovation in India, you know, with over $300 million of revenues that we've earned over the years, you know, through out-licensing our own intellectual property. But I think, you know, at one point, we were spending almost up to $120 million in innovation, which was way beyond the size of the company. So what we've done today is we've scaled it back. Now our innovative spend this year is down to about $50 million, right? So we've pruned some of our programs, been much more judicious, and we've done some great partnership deals. So we have 2 partnership deals which Cyril will talk about. But that's the other area we've addressed. Then on the litigation side, as you know, in the last 5 years, we faced 2 or 3 big litigations. Primarily Zetia was a big one, the DOJ litigations. So on that front, we've actually done a good job in settling many of these. And I think going forward, we have very little exposure on the litigation side. And then, of course, the last point is the high leverage that we were carrying in a very high interest rate environment as an organization. I mean, today, you know, we substantially delevered the balance sheet and we are net cash positive as of March. So these are some of the challenges we faced as an organization if you just look back over the last 5-6 years. And today we've overcome, I would say, all these 5-6 challenges as a firm, right? And we are well poised to propel the firm forward from here on. Glenmark's goal as an organization is to continuously move up the value chain, right? And we've been working on this for years, for decades now, right, as an organization. And if you look at the 3 therapeutic areas that we work in, so dermatology, respiratory, and oncology on the branded side, we made substantial progress in these 3 areas. So in dermatology, as most of you are aware, we are among the leaders in India. We recently in-licensed Pfizer's product, abrocitinib, and we are commercializing that in the derm space. We also did a great deal in Europe with in-licensing a product called Winlevi. Sun Pharma has the U.S. rights. We have the European rights. So Europe, U.K., South Africa, these are some of the areas. All this is helping us strengthen our derm franchise, not just in India, but in most parts of the world, right? So given the significant strengths that we have in dermatology. So the goal, of course, is to continue to build on these therapeutic areas. The second area is respiratory. In the respiratory space, you know, we are ranked now number 2 in India in the respiratory space. We're also number 2 in the Russian market with Ascoril as an expectorant being among the leaders there. And then, of course, with the launch of Ryaltris, which has been transformational, right? We filed this in over 80 countries. We have 34 markets globally where we have a presence. To add to that, we've recently filed, we have almost four products in Europe commercially on the branded respiratory side. And we continue to expand in the respiratory area, right, as a company globally. And then the last segment is oncology. In oncology, you know, if you see, most of our business was mainly in generic oncology, cytotoxic drugs. With the launch of Akynzeo in India, that was our first branded product in India. And now we've gone on to in-license a few more products. So we in-licensed a product called Envafolimab, which is a PD-L1. The unique thing about Envafolimab is it's a subcutaneous injection, the only PD-1, PD-L1 in that space with a sub-Q injection. Almost a $4 billion market in India and emerging markets. So very large market. And the leader of in that space, immuno-oncology particularly, is Keytruda, which is a very large product, among the largest products in the industry. So Envafolimab will be a big competitive advantage for us in India and emerging markets. We also did a deal with Beijing recently. Beijing is among the leading Chinese players with strong presence in most parts of the world, including US and Europe, where we in-licensed two of their products for the Indian market, where we have the exclusive rights. And then, of course, with IGI, right, the strength that we've built in IGI, the capabilities, the technology, the BEAT platform, gives us a very strong footprint in the oncology space. IGI, has two very exciting assets, which Cyril will talk about, right, which we think eventually can get commercialized as we go forward. So these are the three areas where we're very focused on continuing our efforts, right, and building as we go forward. The fourth pillar for us is the generic space. As you know, the US generics market has been extremely challenging for everyone, and we believe will continue to remain challenging. Here, our strategy as an organization is basically to focus on leveraging our respiratory capabilities that we've built over decades, across the world. We believe we'll launch our first two nasal sprays this year in the US market. And of course, we filed generic Flovent, right, the 44 MCG, and we have the other strengths we're working on, which we believe we have a very exclusive position on that particular product. So respiratory is a big area. And then, of course, injectables. We have five or six injectables on the market. We're launching once we're hoping Monroe will get back on stream and we will start commercializing some of the other injectables. So that's the other big lever for growth for the U.S. And then we have some complex generics and some FTFs which have been settled and which are slated for launch as we go forward. So these are the different levers that we have as an organization, by which we are moving up the value chain and continuing to add value. If I look at, the global brand so far, right? So we have three brands that we classify as global brands, right? The first is, of course, Ryaltris. So Ryaltris, we think, it's about $40-50 million in last year. We think this year could be $80+ million in revenues. And this will go to become a major brand for us, right, over the next 2-3 years. So it's scaling up pretty nicely as we go forward. Envafolimab is the oncology product we just talked about. So we start launching in FY26. And Winlevi is the product Clascotrone, which we are launching in Europe, South Africa, and the UK, right? We think total estimated sales for our branded portfolio alone will be $300-400 million over the next 5 years, if not more, right? That's a key platform that we are expanding as we go forward. So just to show you the transition, right, FY19, 55% of our business was branded. FY24, it's 60. We think it'll go up to 70-75% by FY29. And this is despite having some great launches on the generic side and despite the respiratory build-out, the injectable build-out on the generic side, which should help starting this year propel the business forward. So the branded presence will go up significantly. So this is what I call as Glenmark 2.0, right? I mean, if you see historically as a company, we've always been a high growth company, right? And that's what's got us to the $1.5 billion as an organization. However, we had a lower focus on return on capital employed and our overall margins, and of course we built up a lot of leverage, right? In the Glenmark 2.0 era, right, the way we see the company going forward, right, basically there are four pillars for us, right, as an organization going forward. So the first is focus on revenue growth. We will continue to be a high growth company, right, and you will see some of the projections, right. You will continue to see strong growth from Glenmark. However, we will continue to drive capital allocation basis ROC, right. So we are very focused on return on capital employed for every investment that we'll make going forward. The second area for us, which is important, is to further improve our operating efficiencies and to drive continuous margin improvements, right? Our move into the branded space, right, will give us a big lever in terms of margin improvements as you go forward. Clearly, Ryaltris will be a significant contributor to the margins as we go forward. But even despite Ryaltris, there are certain geographies like Latin America and Europe till last year, right, which were under the company average. Those now will continue to accelerate. So you'll see substantial improvement in the overall GCs and margins as you go forward, right, over the next 3 to 5 years. The third point is important. It's a big change and shift in mindset at Glenmark. So stay debt averse, right? And we will make sure that whatever, we will remain free cash positive net of post any capex, dividend and M&A that we do, right? We will continue to stay free cash positive from here on. So we will not leverage up again going forward. And the fourth area is, drive shareholder wealth creation, right? By increasing our payout ratios. Now, historically, our payout ratios have been very low, but our goal is from FY26, right? We will increase our payout ratios via dividend and or share buybacks, right? So these are the four areas we've said we're going to concentrate on as a company going forward. And you'll see through the rest of the presentation that, the growth trajectory is significant and the runway is pretty significant as a company as we go forward. So with this, I'd invite Christoph Stoller, who heads Europe and emerging markets, to present our entire global formulations business for all the geographies. Christoph.
Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. A very warm welcome from my side as well. It's a great pleasure to be with you here this afternoon. Glenmark has a true global commercial footprint. We have a diversified business from a portfolio point of view, generics, OTC, novel branded molecules, and from a geographical point of view. Therefore, we have a very robust and de-risked business. As laid out by our chairman earlier on, Glenmark's core therapeutic areas are respiratory, dermatology, and oncology. In our Indian market, we focus in addition on cardiac and diabetes. In our more tender-driven markets, such as some European countries or the US, for instance, we are more therapeutic area agnostic and focus more on dosage forms such as oral solids, injectables, and devices. In India, our largest market, we have consistently and continuously outgrown competition in recent years. Glenmark is one of the fastest growing companies in India, which represents 31% of our global net revenues. One of our key levers is there that we have been able to build very strong brands. emerging markets and Europe are growth engines for Glenmark as well. In the last 2 years, we have been able to grow our business in Europe by 50%. In the US, as mentioned earlier by our chairman, we have seen some significant challenges in recent years. We are convinced that we have hit the bottom and that things will only be better going forward. As mentioned earlier on, Glenmark is one of the fastest growing companies in the Indian pharmaceutical market. We have continuously and sustainably been able to outgrow competition. This is being reflected in our ranking in the various therapeutic areas. We are number 2 in dermatology. We have improved our ranking to being number 2 in respiratory and number 3 in cardiac. Glenmark is well known for creating mega brands. We have now brands, 9 brands in India's pharmaceutical market in the top 300. 9 brands have a turnover of more than 1 billion rupees and 15 a turnover above 500 million rupees. Launch excellence is one of our key strategic levers and growth drivers. Roughly 4 to 5% of our growth is coming from new product launches. For instance, Glenmark has been the first company in India to introduce Liraglutide, liraglutide indicated for type 2 diabetes. The launch is a success. We see month on month higher sales. Another example of being first is Zita-DM, a triple drug fixed dose combination in the area of diabetes 2 as well. In line with our global strategy to move up the value chain, we focus as well to in-license novel therapies for the benefit of patients in India. Last week, we announced in-licensing of Tevimbra and Brukinsa in the field of oncology from Beijing. Another example is Envafolimab, in-licensed for India and the emerging markets. In addition, we keep adapting our go-to-market model. In our OTC DTC franchise, we have been able to increase our sales fivefold to 3 billion rupees most recently. In line with our strategy, we will continue to grow our core areas, to manage our current brands, and to build new, strong mega brands. Furthermore, we keep extending our geographical footprint in India. We will add 500 sales representatives in India alone in this current fiscal year. We will continue to excel in launch management, and we will keep adding novel medicines, also through way of in-licensing. As mentioned earlier, we are also very successful with our OTC DTC franchise, and we will continue to focus on that area and exploring new alternate channels. Glenmark has a real global commercial footprint. We are active in many high-potential emerging markets in Latin America, Asia-Pacific, Russia, CIS, and Middle East and Africa. The overall market growth opportunity in these markets is huge. Please allow me to call out a few highlights across these emerging markets. Glenmark is the second largest Indian pharma company in Russia. We are the number two in the expectorant market in Russia and number 9 in the dermatology market. As in India and all our emerging markets, we have been able to build very strong brands such as Ryaltris, Ascoril, and Candibiotic. In Latin America, we have businesses in Brazil and Mexico and many more countries, but Brazil and Mexico, which are key in Latin America as they account for more than 50% of the overall Latin American pharmaceutical market. We are amongst the top 10 respiratory in our covered market in these countries, and we have very ambitious growth plans in this year and in the years to come to strengthen our market position in these countries. In the Middle East and Africa, we have both our own presence in key markets, such as being the number three player in Kenya, and strong partnerships with distributors in other markets. As we speak, we are strengthening our position and are expanding in Saudi Arabia. Our key markets in Asia Pacific are Malaysia, Philippines, and Vietnam. We are the number one in our covered market in dermatology, and we have been able to build Ryaltris very successfully in Asia Pacific as well. The launch of envafolimab, the new biological entity, will strengthen our market position further going forward. We plan to grow our business in the years to come with a CAGR, a compound annual growth rate, of 15 to 20%. We will use the following strategic levers to achieve these growth targets. We have a very strong foundation, our commercial infrastructure in these territories. We will use that foundation to continue to increase market shares, for instance, for one of our key brands, Ryaltris, and to launch novel molecules such as envafolimab successfully. In line with our strategy to move up the value chain, this will allow us to increase profitability further. We will expand our geographical footprint selectively, and we will continue to expand our product offering. As laid out when discussing our Indian market, we will as well add novel therapies to our pipeline and portfolio. And of course, it goes without saying, in the growth company, launch excellence remains a key value driver for us. And last but not least, we will continue to build local partnerships in order to grow our business sustainably and in order to enhance our offering. Europe has been the fastest growing region of Glenmark. As mentioned earlier, we have been able to outgrow competition and to grow our business in Europe by more than 50% in 2 years, while increasing profitability significantly. We have our own presence in key markets such as the UK, Germany, Spain, Italy, and we work with key market leaders in select markets in which we are not present ourselves, such as, for instance, France, where we do, in these markets, we use the model of out-licensing. Again, in line with our strategy to move up the value chain, we have been able to strengthen our non-generic business segments. We have increased the share of our branded business by 10 percentage points in 5 years to today a level of 30%. This share will keep going up as we add novel therapies to our pipeline and our portfolio. As we have demonstrated in the last 2 years, we have a great foundation. By adding more branded products, more novel therapies, we will be able to benefit from that infrastructure even further, and this will lead to increased profitability. A key driver of our growth has been in the past and will continue to be our respiratory franchise. We will launch 4 key brands in the coming 12 to 18 months. We are very happy with the success of one of our key brands, Ryaltris, indicated for allergic rhinitis. In Czech Republic, to quote just one example, for instance, we have a market share of today 25%, and we are very happy with our market shares in Poland as well and in Slovakia, which is the most recent country in which we have launched that brand. And last but not least, we will expand our geographical footprint further. We have recently entered the Italian market, and just a few months ago, we have started operations in Austria. This will also support our intention to increase profitability further as we are changing our geographical footprint in Europe. In a nutshell, summarizing what I just mentioned, we will continue to grow our core business and to excel with launches. While respiratory remains a core therapeutic area, we will add novel molecules such as Winlevi, clascoterone indicated for acne, the first NCE, new chemical entity launch in the history of Glenmark in Europe. Winlevi will be the cornerstone of our dermatology franchise in Europe, which will be a key growth driver for us. We have a clearly defined plan how to expand our geographical footprint in Europe, and as just mentioned, we keep executing that plan, most recently our expansion into Austria. We have a very strong, agile team in Europe, which will continue to identify opportunities and to execute these opportunities. All of this put together will allow us to continue to outgrow competition and to increase profitability further, in line with our global strategy to move up the value chain. As mentioned earlier, we have seen challenges in our US business in the most recent time, which has led to a decline of our top line over the last 5 years. The key reasons being competition and price erosion, a lack of meaningful product launches, and the FDA audits. We are convinced that we have now achieved the inflection point and that the situation will improve going forward, meaning that we will return back to growth. We have a very diversified portfolio. Our top 5 products in the US account for only 25% of our revenue in that country. Glenmark has been able to maintain the leadership positions in key products. In 27% of our portfolio, we are ranked number 2. In 27% of our portfolio, we are ranked number 1, and we are ranked number 2 in 33% of our portfolio. Our recent approvals and our pipeline. We have filed 47 products and have received approval for 51 products in the last 5 years. And we have launched 57 products. That number includes 6 in-licensed products. We have worked very hard and focused to continuously and rigorously work on quality improvements. The remediation at both our Monroe and our Goa sites have completed. We have engaged to resolve the warning letters at the earliest. Last but not least, 2 days ago, Mark Kibucci has joined Glenmark as President North America, another milestone to strengthen our position in our US market. The key driver to be back on the growth path in the US are our differentiated launches. We will continue to strengthen our injectable portfolio. Today, we offer 6-7 molecules. By fiscal year 26, we will have a portfolio of 15 molecules, which includes 4-5 coming from our Monroe site. In respiratory, we have already launched 2 nasal sprays. By adding more files, we are building a very solid respiratory portfolio with nasal sprays and NDIs. Complex generics and approved, settled first-to-files will be two other key pillars of our growth strategy. We have three first-to-file products in our pipeline. Due to confidentiality reasons, I'm not in a position to call these out. And last but not least, OTC and our institutional business will further support our growth ambition, as well as our Canadian business, where we intend to continue to grow our market share. Thank you very much for your attention. And with that, I would like to ask Cyril Konto, President and CEO of IGI, to join me on stage. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's a pleasure to be back and present the progress made towards the last update 18 months ago. My name is Cyril Konto. I'm the President and Chief Executive Officer of Ichnos Glenmark Innovation. So we launched IGI in January to combine forces from Ichnos Sciences Incorporation and Glenmark, the Innovation Medicine Unit. With that, we achieve a robust pipeline combining biologics, and you may remember last time I presented the BEAT platform, a protein platform for building new molecule, multispecific molecules. And now we're also integrating small molecule out of the MAPE, Glenmark Research Center, and this will enable developing drugs in both heme malignancies and solid tumors. We are leveraging experts from different parts of the world. Our clinical development group is located in New York, led by Lida Paco. We have biologics capability, including pharmacology and protein engineering in Lausanne, Switzerland, and now have a small molecule research capabilities in Mumbai. We are also leveraging Glenmark footprint in India. We have both our lead asset, ISB-1442 and ISB-2001, approved by the DCGI in India, so that we can increase speed of patient recruitment and at the same time leverage cost efficiencies. I'm glad to report that we treated our first patient with ISB-1442 in India yesterday. Lastly, when I joined here, Ichnos Sciences was burning a lot of cash. Glenn mentioned $120 million. We've been cost-efficient to a point that we expect to spend $50 million in fiscal year 25 while we continue to grow the portfolio. A few words on our portfolio, made of a diversity of immune cell engagers and now small molecule across different type of cancer indication. I'll start with ISB-2001. This is our world-renowned trispecific BCMA, CD38, CD3 T-cell engager that we are developing in the relapsed refractory multiple myeloma setting. We're in phase one with this asset. It has received orphan drug designation by the FDA, and we expect to disclose proof of concept clinical data at the American Society of Hematology annual meeting later this year. ISB-1442 is an innovative drug, again, multispecific with two CD38 biparatopic binders and one CD47 binder engaging myeloid cells. We're developing this asset in multiple myeloma with plans to initiate a clinical trial in AML later on. The key differentiating factor of this asset is the fact that it engages myeloid cells in a crowd of T-cell engagers, so it's different subset of immune cells, which could translate into a competitive advantage. Again, this drug has received orphan drug designation by the FDA. We are now embarking in small molecule coming from the Glenmark innovation pipeline. And I'm glad to report that the CBLB inhibitor, or GRC-65327, is expected to treat its first patient in early 2025 with the DCGI submission scheduled later this year. This will be our first asset with a solid tumor pan solid tumor indications. You may remember last time I came here, I reported a recent deal with Almirall Therapeutics, a Spanish pharmaceutical company, and our ISB880 asset. I'm glad to report the progress of our alliance partner with this anti-IL-1 RAP monoclonal antibody in inflammatory disease. We also, in the meanwhile, licensed our telarzolimab phase 2B asset and its follow-on molecule ISB830X8 to Astria Therapeutics, and they have the plan to file the IND for the follow-on molecule with their YTE-modified version before the end of this year. This is very important for us because those are the intellectual property revenues Glenn mentioned earlier with, I'd say, world-class type of out-licensing deal. And lastly, I want to leave you with our roadmap. It's a simplified roadmap to highlight the key information. We formed IGI as part of our cost efficiency model. We will deliver clinical proof of concept with ISB2001 and or ISB1442 this year. At the same time, we have expanded our BID platform, the protein platform that Ichnos Sciences fully own. With that, in parallel, we're also expecting to divest our manufacturing plan to remain even further cost efficient. We will, on the basis of all these elements, set a partnership with one of our lead assets, at least, in fiscal year 26. All combined, plus the recovery of the biotech market in the U.S., we shall expect to go to the NASDAQ for a capital raise in fiscal year 27. Thank you for your attention. I'm now welcoming on stage V.S. Mani, our Executive Director and Global Chief Financial Officer for Glenmark Pharmaceutical.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Glenmark Investor Day. I'm V.S. Mani. So Glenn had earlier articulated our transition through various uncertainties and all the mitigation measures that we took to emerge stronger. One of the key objectives in the past 5 years has been to de-risk the business. And we took a number of measures to de-risk the business. And the critical ones are, you know, I would like to sort of list out. One is obviously you all are aware that the U.S. Benchmark interest rates in the last 2 years went from 0.5% to almost 5.5%. So therefore, it was imperative for us to kind of reduce our gross debt, which we could do very substantially. Second was also on the substantial progress in closing of key U.S. litigations. And obviously, we had cases for Zetia, one of our products, as well as some of the cases, the DOJ. I think we have managed to settle some of these cases and obviously de-risk us substantially. This is very critical in terms of the operational efficiency. And you know that if you want to improve your EBITDA, et cetera, you need to do a lot of work on the SG&A side, which includes the R&D as well. As you can see, our other expenses over the last couple of years have come down, and that's due to the continuous focus on the operational efficiencies. And last but not the least, we have done a lot of work in terms of, and you'll see in the next couple of slides, in terms of the work that we've done on the CapEx as well as the R&D allocation. I mean, all this is probably obviously helps us to improve our ROCs and minimize the risk, okay? Over the last 5 years, we have taken a number of initiatives to actually strengthen the balance sheet, which is very important. Okay, and I would like to bucket these initiatives into three slots. Okay, one is obviously the SG&A Operational Excellence Program that has really helped us to shore up our margins much better in a very challenging environment. Second is obviously we did divest some of our non-core portfolios. And third was, we actually spun out two of our divisions. One was API into Glenmark Life Sciences and the innovation into basically Ichnos. And at a very opportune time, we could actually list Glenmark Life Sciences, and now we could actually find a strategic buyer. As it was already explained that we are now looking more at a branded business, so it made a lot of sense. And it absolutely helped us to deliver a balance sheet. Also, now with IGI, we are looking at sort of being more rationalizing or optimizing our further R&D spends. All this will help us. What you can see is that because of this, our net debt to EBITDA has improved substantially. We used to be about higher than 2 times in 19. Now we are a net cash positive company. Okay, that made a lot of makes a lot of difference. Also, if you can see over the last 5 years, the rating agencies have also upgraded us across the board. Okay, thank you. This slide will critically show you how we have managed to sort of optimize our R&D investments and right-sizing the CAPEX. In 19, our R&D spend was almost 13.2%, and we were at almost 12,980 million rupees, so it's really substantial. And now we're looking at something like a 7 to 7.25 in the coming year, so this brings down it substantially. And as earlier Cyril had pointed out, our innovation spend would be about 50 million. And as far as the CAPEX goes, again, in 19, we were at almost 12,372 million rupees. And now we're talking about 7,000 million rupees. And this has been the ballpark in which we have been spending our CAPEXs in the last 3 to 4 years. So I think these are achievable numbers. Okay. So what does all this do? Okay. So in a way, if you really look at it, our estimated earnings and also obviously the kind of balance sheet that we have today, if you take put it all together, you can see that our ROCs and our ROEs are better than on an average basis. If you look at it compared to the peer average, we'll look better. In terms of our ROCs, we're looking at almost 19%. And in terms of the ROEs, we are looking at almost 15%. I think both this should help us, you know, very important. So this is a very critical slide as far as I look at it. So in November of 22, we met you all and we gave you guidances on 7 key matrices. And I would like to now show you what we had guided in 17, in November of 22, and where are we today? Okay. So in terms of revenue growth, etc., we had spoken about 10 to 12% growth over the next 3 to 4 years. Today we are saying in FY25 we'll be at about 1,35,000 million or 1,40,000 million depending on how growth happens. R&D expenses we are guided to about 8.5 to 9% from FY24, and we're now talking about 7 to 7.25% in the next year. And the EBITDA margin we said would be 23% by FY27, and now we are saying that coming year will be 19, and we are expecting to improve it by 1 to 2% over each year. And obviously, as we had already articulated earlier, that we have a number of products that are going to come up in the market, be it Ryaltris is growing or the number of other branded products that will come. So obviously, growth will fuel this improvement in the EBITDA margins. And obviously, right-sizing some of our expenses will also help us to reach there. Okay. In terms of CAPEX, we had guided to about 7,000 million over the next 4 years, and we pretty much were there most of the times, give and take some small changes. We had said that we would be a zero debt company, net debt by 26. Happy to say that we are net cash positive at the end of this year. ROC, we had guided to about 23% in FY27, and we are pretty much on track there, okay, as you can already see. It's very easy. And in terms of the payout ratio, we said that we'll evaluate, you know, enhancing dividend payout ratio buyback over the next 4 to 5 years. What we would like to say is that we're looking at a 15 to 20% minimum payout from FY26, and this would be via dividend or share buyback. Earlier, Glenn had spoken about Glenmark 2.0 and the evolving ideologies. What I would like to bring out here is that how the long-term targets are now very aligned with the evolving ideologies. So one was focus on revenue growth and continue to drive capital allocation basis ROC. So obviously with the 12 to 15% revenue growth on CAGR and the focus so much on the in terms of the ROC, I think in terms of the capital investment or whatever, I think we should see it growing further. We are looking to generate further operating efficiencies to drive continuous margin improvement. We are looking at a long term of 7 to 7.5% in terms of our R&D spends. And obviously we already guided to about 19% in the next year in terms of EBITDA and a further improvement each year by 1 to 2%. This is important. Stay averse to debt and remain free cash positive post any dividend, capex, M&A, etc. Obviously there will be a 7,000 million spend on capex, which is very important in terms of looking at the growth and what we are ambitions that we have. But we will look to drive further improvement in ROE and ROC in the next 4 years. And the most important, we would like to drive shareholder wealth creation, 15 to 20% payout over the next few years. With that, thank you very much. We'll now be ready.
Thank you to all the presenters and the management team. So I would request Glenn, Mani, Cyril, Christoph and Ashish to come on the stage so that we can start with the Q&A session. As mentioned, our participants joining virtually can also ask questions through the chat box or the question box on the webcast or on the Zoom link. We'll first give the opportunity to the people present in the room. Anybody has a question? I think we have a few people who can help you with the mics. So I have a few questions coming virtually, so let's start with those. So one question is on the CAPEX guidance. So while we have said that 700 crores is the guidance in terms of future CAPEX, how do you see this in terms of fixed asset addition and any in-licensing that we do? Are we planning to add any more new manufacturing sites or where is the fixed asset addition specifically focused on?
Well, clearly, I think, given our rollout, right, and the 12 to 15% top line growth CAGR, right, I think it'll be important for us to invest in CAPEX, particularly in terms of building our manufacturing capabilities and capacities, mainly on the respiratory area, as a big driver for the company going forward. Additionally, I think in-licensing is something we will continue doing. We did Envafolimab recently, which will commercialize in F26. We'll continue to look for novel assets which can further help accelerate our vision to be a branded company while remaining disciplined in terms of the overall CAPEX, right? And so that we don't impact the overall return ratios and the other parameters.
So we have another question on IGI, so maybe you and Cyril can both chip in. So the question is, there are two parts basically. One is, in terms of the pipeline, what's the most exciting asset that you are looking forward to? And maybe, Glenn, you can address this. So how are we looking at investments into IGI beyond F25? So obviously there is a roadmap, but how are we looking at the investments and what's your take on that?
In terms of excitement, they're all my babies and they are all sourced from our proprietary multi-specific platform. I say based on the clinical data available and the recent approval of T-cell engagers, we know the T-cell engager works, and ISB2001 being our leading T-cell engager and targeting two myeloma targets is by default my favorite asset. That being said, I also believe that there is so many T-cell engager, and we need something else than a drug that engages the T-cells, because they're going to be exhausted in those patients. So if we can demonstrate the value of a myeloid cell engager, or down in our pipeline, an NK cell engager against solid tumor, that would be also a great competitive advantage. I think this is also the overall strategy we're building in IGI. We are leveraging different type of immune cells against heme malignancies and solid tumors. Now, with regards to further funding, I will turn to the chairman.
So I think, look, we've said that, you know, we will be at $50 million this year. Next year, you know, the path forward is, I don't see us crossing 50 million. We will get additional revenues coming out of partnerships, and subsequently we are looking at a capital raise. So we believe that from a funding perspective, there's a strong possibility from FY26, Ichnos will self-fund itself, right, going forward. So that's the journey forward from a funding perspective that we are hoping to achieve, right, as we go forward.
Maybe an opportunity for... Go ahead.
Yeah, hi, good evening all. So my question is slightly backward looking. You sold off GLS. How did you arrive at this decision? Now, there you also had you also could have contemplated shutting down the US business or selling it out at whatever 1.2 times sales, whatever the valuation you could have got. Because it seems that you have sold off a business which was cash generating, higher margin, to kind of keep on funding a business which is structurally challenged. So, and did you take the help of any external advisors, any consultants were engaged who kind of recommended this kind of a strategy? So slightly backward looking question, because it's important to understand how the decision making will happen in the coming years.
Well, I think the GLS asset decision was purely based on the fact that, you know, if you go back in time, right, we entered the API space, right, back in 2005, primarily with a vision that we would be a vertically integrated company with the lowest cost structure in the generics business, right, thinking that the US generics business was supposed to be this pot of gold, right, where, you know, being vertically integrated would be important to succeed in that marketplace, right. The operating landscape has changed significantly over the last 5-6 years, right. So that thesis doesn't hold true, right, where you can actually be a major player, and having the best cost structure means the most successful company in the US generics market. So given that thesis change, right, holding GLS, holding an API platform, right, where Glenmark was using only 30% and 70% of the API platform was being sold to external customers, right, made very little sense for us to keep it within the umbrella. So that's the reason we spun it out, and eventually we recently sold the asset. The rest of the business is a pure branded formulations business, while obviously running a formulations business has its own challenges, right? But if you look at our presentation, it's a well-diversified business, right? Coming from multiple geographies, so with very little exposure to any one geography. We've done a lot of hard work in building our capabilities in rest of the world markets. We have some unique positioning, right, in rest of the world markets, where we've got all the, you know, we've got a ready platform, particularly in the area of dermatology, respiratory and oncology, right? And we are an ideal partner of choice because of the platform that what we bring to the table. So I think, you know, being in the formulation space, being a branded company, has a completely different connotation, right, as we go forward for us. So I don't know if that answers your question, right? But the API, the sale of GLS and the spin-out of GLS was purely because our ambitions were very different way back in the day, right, when we built GLS, right? Today the US generics market, there are lots of players, there's lots of competition, there are a lot of guys vertically integrated, and as you clearly know, right, the challenges are very different.
And
even for the US business, right, as Christoph mentioned in his presentation, we believe that we have hit the bottom. So with the pipeline that we have on nasal sprays, MDIs, injectables, I think we should be able to grow at a much faster clip from here onwards. So that gives us confidence that even on the generic side, the growth will come back on track.
So the vertical integration aspect doesn't hold good anymore, right? We are working more on respiratory products, on injectable products, on various complex dosage forms.
And in terms of the margin guidance we're talking about in FY25 and beyond, now FY24 has also benefited from a lot of costs that have come off, right? I mean, you talk about various base chemicals, APIs, intermediates, those costs have kind of eased out a bit, in fact, quite a bit in FY24. So when you are giving a 19% EBITDA margin guidance in FY25, does it incorporate some bit of cost escalation as well, or how do you see the cost panning out and whether there can be a risk to your margin guidance or not?
Yeah. So when we talk of 19% EBITDA margin, obviously there is a benefit of some of the R&D expenses, etc. And also the advantage of number of products that we have launched or the products that are going to come. So the expansion of some of the markets, all that taken together will take the margin to 19+. Okay. That's how we look at it.
And of course, Ryaltris is a big driver there also in terms of improving the overall margin profile.
Right. And one final question on cash generation for FY25. Now the debtors have come off sharply as of end March balance sheet. I believe India sales reset in 3Q had a role to play in that. So with debtors likely to go up again in FY25, would you still be in a position to be net cash by end of this year?
Yeah, sure. So I'll answer that. So obviously the debtors or overall working capital may go up by 10 to 12 days. But even taking all that into account and including our capex, etc., we also see some payout in terms of, for our litigation also. We have what, 300 crores that may come up, which we had given in our call also. We still have a small, at least a decent 200 to 300 crore cash generation this year. That's what we're looking at.
What kind of payouts are you budgeting for FY25 for these litigations? And
about 300 crores.
And then going forward, 26, 27?
It will be about 80 crores or 10 million, that's it.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, good evening. Just one quick question in R&D. So you are expecting your revenue to grow at 15% to 20%, but maintaining your R&D spends at around 7-7.5% of revenues. Of this, your IGS spends should be flat at around 400 crores. So this means that your R&D is actually going up very, very fast in the next 3 to 4 years. So can you just guide us on where exactly you're spending money, what are the kind of assets that you are looking at on spending on this money on?
So I think we've been a little conservative in guiding, right? Our R&D spends could even be lower than 7-7.25, right, going forward. At this point, as we've said, right, our biggest spends are on respiratory development, right, as we go forward. So building the portfolio of respiratory products, building some branded products that we are developing to commercialize as we go forward. That's where the bulk of our R&D spends would go, right, going forward.
So just respiratory, or you have something else in mind, onco or derm, any of these other products?
So look, respiratory is the biggest driver for us, right, in terms of R&D spends. But additionally, of course, you know, we have oncology, we have some clinical trials that we'll run, envafolimab, you know, some of the others, right, to get the products registered. But you're right, it's clearly a conservative view, right? 7-7.25, there's a strong possibility we could be below that.
Okay.
As we go forward.
And just one more. So how many of your US launches today are contingent on your plant approvals? Because your three plants are under regulatory scanner for now.
Sorry, can you?
How many of your US launches, approvals or launches that you expect in the next couple of years are dependent on your plants getting cleared?
So today, we have if I look at the US business, right, we basically have four plants which are supplying the US, right? So we have our Indore and Aurangabad facility which are clear right now. We have Goa which is under a warning letter and Monroe which is under a warning letter, right? Most of our filings are all coming out of Indore and Aurangabad, right? So we are hoping that, you know, there won't be any major impact on any of the approvals, right, going forward.
Okay, got it. Thanks.
Yeah. So in FY24, what was the drag because of the Monroe facility, the overall EBITDA, both in terms of remediation cost as well as the fixed cost? And what type of...
Can you just repeat? I can't hear you well.
What was the impact of the Monroe facility on the EBITDA in FY24 because of the remediation cost as well as the fixed cost? And what type of delta swing can we see this year, sort of reduction? And in 26, hopefully when it comes on stream, what type of upside we can see?
Sure. We spent about $25 million in Monroe. So that's the OPEX that we have. And in the last year, the remediation costs are much lower. It's about $4 million. We spent about 30 crores there.
This $30 million of fixed cost and remediation cost, how do you see that number in FY25?
Yeah, it was about $4 million. So both put together, we spent about $29 million last year.
Yeah, something high in FY25, how do you see this number of $30
million? The OPEX should be similar, around $25 million. We don't see much remediation cost at all, very insignificant.
And secondly, in terms of India, on the productivity front, how are you seeing the numbers in the next 2-3 years?
On the product, sorry?
Productivity per MR.
Well, our India business, you know, we are clearly among the fastest growing companies, right, in the Indian space. So I can't give you a specific number on productivity of MR, but clearly it's up there, right? We have about 5,000 reps today in the India business. It's about a 4,000 crore business, right, in this year. So you can do the math, right, on the productivity per MR, right? But that's something which, if you're able to run the, you know, continued on this trajectory, right, of the pace at which we're growing in India, I think, you know, we're pretty comfortable and confident that the India business will continue to fire going forward.
One last thing on your remedial stake in Glenmark Life. So what are your thoughts on that? When would you look to monetize the remaining stake that you have?
Sorry, I can't hear you.
The remaining stake in Glenmark Life, what are the thoughts on that? We have some more stake left in Glenmark Life, so are we looking to monetize that?
So we have the stake. We'll currently it is there. So we'll take at an opportune time. We'll look at what we have to do next. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
So my question is, what is the share of in-license products for the total revenue currently and where do you see going forward? And the follow-up, whether the in-license contribution will affect the margins?
Clearly the in-license product share is very, very small today, right? I mean, we've just done these deals, right? But the margin profile of the in-license products is pretty good, right? At the gross margin level. So very significant. So we don't think the overall margins will get negatively impacted by the in-license product.
My second question is, what is the current share of those three brands, Ryaltris, Winlevi, and Envafolinib to the total revenue, and where do you see going forward?
Ryaltris, as I said, was $40-50 million last year. This year, about 80 odd million. In terms of revenues. The other two are yet to launch.
In the future, where do you see it will
be? So if you see my presentation, right, we said the three of them will be almost 300 to 400 million in the next 5 years.
Thank you.
Yeah, good evening. Good evening, everybody. So, my question was related to ICNOS. ICNOS, we indicated in FY26 some capital raise may be considered. If you give some clarity, what kind of capital raise we are talking? It is about out-licensing funding we are talking about or fresh capital raise we are talking about?
We are advancing the portfolio, and we're going to reach a point where we will get prepared for our pivotal phase, which is expensive. So that's where we don't have the definitive digit figure, but we know that this will require further support than in addition to Glenmark, so in replacement to Glenmark, I should say. So that's our plan. Here, we have a gross estimate of a minimum of $100 million in terms of capital raise to help us get the funds to run through the pivotal trial execution and prepare the launch of our first asset.
So, but I think to answer your question, right, the thinking is more in terms of partnership, which will help fund FY26 and capital raise in 27. And, you know, it's hard to predict, you know, what the amount is and what the situation will be like, right, as we go forward, right, in terms of IGI capital raise.
Yeah, so in this context, like in our R&D expenses, towards innovation, we have reduced the expenses there in a total R&D. So it would have been funded internally. So instead of doing this, what we are thinking that going forward we will raise money, that is what the strategy we are working on.
Yeah, so look, Glenmark has invested substantially on innovation, right, over the last decade or two decades. The goal is at some point IGI should be self-funding, okay. Right, I hope that makes sense to you, right? So from in that perspective, next year we're hoping to do a big partnership which will help IGI to fund its expenses, and the following year we will do a capital raise. From there on, IGI will be self-funding. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, understood. Yeah. Some clarity. And now the balance sheet is in a good shape. So are we thinking of some M&A opportunity or something? We are scouting something?
Currently, we have nothing on M&A, right? I mean, we, for the kind of growth that we are seeing as an organization for the next 2 or 3 years, you know, we may do some small tuck-in acquisitions, but really our focus is to continue growing the business organically, right? And to continue to scale the business organically.
Fine. Thank you. Thanks a lot. On the list.
I think we can take some questions from the virtual audience. So one question is on Europe. So obviously we've seen phenomenal growth in the last 2 years particularly. So how do we see in terms of a growth percentage or a CAGR for Europe going forward? Can we expect a percentage which is similar to the last 2 years or something, some guidance that we can provide basis the initiatives that we are working on?
So the first part of the answer will be the growth in Europe came from different countries, so it was really well spread. Now to be able to maintain a growth of 50%, that is of course a challenge. See, the beauty in Europe is it's quite a complex region, many different cultures, many different languages, right? But we have a very strong team and we are able to find the opportunities and to maximize. We have, of course, will grow further with Realtris. We will grow further with Winlevi, our new chemical entity in acne, clascoterone, right? So certainly the growth will be there in Europe. To maintain a 50% growth over 2 years, that I think is a challenge, especially the bigger we get, right?
And on the India business, so compared to the rest of the large players in the industry, we are much more focused in terms of our therapy areas. So we are strong in 4 or 5 therapy areas. So obviously we have grown substantially over the last couple of years and we've grown faster than the market. Are we confident that we can sustain this market beating growth only through these 5 areas, or do we feel the need to expand into maybe therapy area number 6 in the near future?
I think there's substantial growth in the India segment, right, in the 4 or 5 areas that we currently operate. So derm, we are ranked number 2. We will continue to gain market share. In the respiratory area, we're now number 2. We still have a good runway in terms of market share gains. cardiovascular, now we are number 3. And there also, I mean, there are various areas where we still don't have a presence, even within the segment, right? For example, lipid-lowering drugs, you know, heart failure, these are areas where we're clearly not up there. And then, of course, diabetes, which is the fourth segment, you know, we've got a number of launches coming in the diabetes obesity segment, right, with all the GLP-1 products which are out there. So I think there is enough of a runway in the four segments that we operate. And of course now oncology, which we were historically just selling cytotoxic oncology products with the two in-licensed products, both envafolimab and the Beijing assets, right, that should help, you know, help us launch more differentiated oncology products. So I think we've got our work cut out for the next 4-5 years in India, right, with these five segments that we operate in, right, and we think there's enough of growth levers and growth opportunities in the five segments that we're operating. Besides that, of course, our OTC, DTC segment continues to gain a lot of scale. So we are now almost up to 400 million, 350, 400 crores in revenues in OTC, DTC. So that's a substantial piece and it's growing very nicely. So that will continue to drive India growth. So I think the India business across these 4-5 levers, right, will do exceedingly well over the next 3 to 5 years.
One more question again on the business. So ROW, obviously we again slightly different than our peers because we have a pretty broad presence across various markets. So what risks do you see in terms of the growth going forward as a region, not individual markets but as a region?
Well, I think emerging markets are of course different because by default, right, you do not have the political stability that you would have in a region such as Europe. So there will be inherent risks, which can be currency risks or it can be political risks by itself. But at the same time, of course, emerging markets also offer huge growth opportunities, right? I have shown this on the slide. When we look at these four regions, LATAM, Asia Pacific, Middle East, Africa, Russia, CIS, the potential of the markets there are huge. Now, when we talk about you know, what we can influence as a company, right, then we are very well positioned. We have a very strong foundation, and now we, by adding more products, by adding new novel molecules, right, by strengthening our brands, by growing the core, by adding new molecules, that we will be able to outgrow competition significantly in these markets.
Go ahead.
Yeah. On ROC, while the overall target is 19% as a company, do we internally also have a minimum threshold that each of the business segments have to achieve? You know, because while we all understand that the India piece has much higher ROC, so it looks overall 19 looks attractive figure. So is there a minimum threshold ROC that each of the segments have to achieve in FY25 over a medium term period? And secondly, when you are now doing capital allocation every year of 700 crores a year, what is the minimum threshold there that you look at for any large capex?
So obviously, when you look at the ROC, each business will have a different ROC. But that is how the capital allocation over the years also have changed. Earlier, as I explained, we were at almost at 12,000 odd million rupees. We are spending now at 7,000 million or 700 crores. Obviously, we looked across the board and looked at each business and how we look at the capital allocation. So we'll try our best to ensure that we get to a minimum threshold. It's not good to tell each number for a minimum threshold, but obviously there could be businesses which could grow in future, so we would look at it. But on an overall basis, we'll try to be as careful as possible in terms of allocating capexes or working capital or anything to ensure we get to our ROC.
That is on the incremental basis, but overall as a business, is it that in the medium term, once this business plan works out, is it like minimum 12% or 15% ROC each business division has to earn?
So we'll try our best to be very close to the number that we just indicated. We said 19. Not all of them will be 19, but many of them will be slightly higher also. But at the same time, there are some businesses which are pretty high. So obviously, you cannot today stop doing anything there. We will obviously try our best how to optimize and improve the profitability there. That's how we get to the number.
But to answer your question, yes, of course we have internal thresholds, right, in terms of how we are allocating capital, right? But it's impossible to publicly state, right, what they are. Right?
Thank you.
Good.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. Glenn, you mentioned scaling up of priorities will be a big contributor for your margin expansion ahead. So with 40, 50 million sales currently, is the margin profile substantially ahead of your corporate average? And say like we move from 40, 50 to 80 next year. So what kind of delta can come in there?
So there's a substantial delta that we are gaining out of Rialtris, right? I think at the, you know, at the company-wide level, right, it is having an influence on the overall EBITDA, right? So there is, it's definitely moving the overall EBITDA needle, right? So when we're guiding this year, 19%, Rialtris has a big role to play in that. I can't give you any specifics beyond that. So obviously it's ahead of the company average, right? But it's, and every year that we scale this brand, be rest assured that a big chunk of the EBITDA is coming out of the Rialtris branded presence that we're building out.
Yeah, and with product launched in so many markets, how do you book, like is it booked at the sales or you have different arrangement, like sometimes it will be like booked at the net profit level?
So when we are giving you the number, right, of 40, 50 million, that includes sales, it includes licensing revenues, it includes, it's a mix of various different pieces, right? So I don't know if that answers your question, right? Because some markets we are selling on our own, some markets is through a partner. So you've got licensing revenues, you've got royalties, you've got all kinds of things baked in there.
So end of the day, that is the revenue that we derive from the sales, okay? So partners may sell sometimes a little higher. So we are present in multiple ways. Somewhere we are own presence, somewhere we are doing through partners. And obviously there are somewhere where there is a royalty or a profit share. So all that bakes in and comes to 40.
And what kind of spend you do for this brand to further expand? Like do you spend on marketing or it's done by partners?
So in the markets where we are present, of course we spend on marketing, right? But the good news is we continue to leverage the infrastructure we've already built in respiratory, right? So in most of the emerging markets, markets in Eastern Europe and multiple other markets, right? We have already an existing infrastructure in respiratory. So we have field forces on the ground, all that in place. So we're not adding, so we're just leveraging that infrastructure much more effectively, right? In terms of costs, right? So we're getting a lot of operating leverage in the markets where we are selling. Obviously, in the markets where the partners are selling, it's their responsibility, right? So they invest in all the marketing spends and field force and so on and so forth.
And my second question is, like, what gives you confidence to say that U.S. business is finally bottomed out? Because I guess we have been waiting for this business to recover for last few years, but things have been shifting quarter after quarter.
So I think, you know, the U.S. business clearly has been challenging, right, for us. We think we've hit the bottom purely because, you know, we've now finished most of the remediation work. Some of the plants now are, the productivity output is going out up from some of the plants. In addition, we've started to get some new product approvals, like Brimotimo was a good approval we got. The next quarter also we are expecting a couple of good approvals. We've launched a number of in-licensed injectable products, almost 5-6 injectable products, which are doing very well, right? So I think, and that coupled with the nasal spray launches hopefully yet this year, right, that we will do, that can be quite substantial. So we, all these factors make us believe that the U.S. has bottomed, right? The increased productivity, increased volumes, increased, you know, new product approvals, some new businesses that we're picking up, the launch of the injectable portfolio, the nasal sprays, all these things make us believe that we've hit the bottom in this year. And of course, subsequent years, you know, with the launch of not just the nasal sprays, but generic Flovent, you know, getting launched, hopefully we'll We'll be able to commercialize sometime next year, and then, you know, then we've got the first to file products. So it's a full runway of products which are highly differentiated and high value added, right, which will help grow the US business going forward.
Thank you.
Maybe I can squeeze in a couple of the virtual questions. So, so on Envafolimab, we have a question. So obviously this seems like an important opportunity for the future. So there are three parts to the question. So basically, what are the differentiating factors of Envafolimab and why we are confident about the opportunity? What is the overall size of the market or the opportunity that we are targeting, and what kind of investments will be required in the next few years for us to realize that?
So the overall market size of these products, right, between Keytruda, Nivolumab and various other products, it's almost a $20 billion market worldwide, right, of which $4 billion is just emerging markets, right, for which we have the right. So India and emerging markets is almost $4 billion, right? And, you know, given that, you know, we have a huge differentiation, which is a subcutaneous injection, which can be given in a home setting compared to, you know, the infusion, which has to, where the patient needs to go into the clinic and take the infusion or go into the hospital and take the infusion, right? So the sub-Q injection can be a significant differentiator, coupled with, of course, you know, we expect to use pricing as a strategy also, right, to gain market share. So these are the two big drivers for Envafolimab. Our belief is that, you know, FY26, we will start the rollout in some of the emerging markets, but the real traction will be FY27. And beyond, right, as we go forward.
And in terms of investment required?
Investment, a lot of the investment is leveraging our current oncology infrastructure. So we already have the infrastructure where we have sales reps calling on the oncologist, selling cytotoxic drugs and some age-old products, right? And that we can further leverage by now putting some novel drugs in the bag, right, from a promotion perspective. So that will drive pretty similar to what we're doing with Ryaltris, right, where we are continuing to leverage the existing infrastructure that we've built out in emerging markets and India. We're doing the same, the model is the same for Envafolimab.
One question on the two sites, Goa and Monroe. So given that we've said that the remediation is concluded, so when are we expecting the re-inspection and the warning letter to be lifted?
So we can't give a concrete timeline. We've already requested the FDA for a meeting on Monroe. So hopefully that should come through quickly and we can restart manufacturing on Monroe. Goa, you know, we are ready. We're done with the remediation and we'll wait to see when the agency comes.
And maybe take one more from the virtual audience. So what is the expected revenue or expected income from the respiratory device based products? So we have obviously quite a few. We have Ryaltris, we have the generic products in the US, but globally, how do you see the whole respiratory device and the contribution to the revenue in the next 4 to 5 years?
I think that's a little too granular. I don't think we can give that kind of visibility on the specific device-based products. But again, if you see ex-India, right? India, we have a big acute business along with chronic, acute driven by Ascoril and Alex, two big brands, right, in India. If you see outside of India, most of our business is device-based, right? So almost all our respiratory business, whether it is Europe or in Latin America, right, or in most of the markets, is all device-based. So it's hard to give a specific number there.
Sure. Any questions from the audience? Go ahead.
Glenn, just one question for you. You mentioned earlier that, we have been a poster child of innovation within pharma in the country. Now, given that you have had a vision of creating NCs, NBEs out of India, do you think IGI in its current shape and form, with barely $50 million of annual spends, and possibly which could come down further going forward, do you think you can realize that vision of creating NCs, NBEs out of India?
So I feel, you know, IGI has three or four very exciting assets, okay? Two of them are partnered out, right? So there's always the possibility we'll continue to get milestones and royalties from the two assets. Additionally, the two assets that Cyril mentioned, right, 2001, 1442, very exciting assets, right? And even if one of these play out, right, Alankar, all it takes is one asset, right, in this game, right? Because you're talking of highly differentiated opportunities, right, in the oncology space. So all it takes is one of these to work for us to be transformational, right, both for Glenmark, IGI, and for innovation as a whole, right? So we've done this for a long time. We've invested substantial amount of capital, right? And the journey for us from here on is to be disciplined about take very concentrated bets, right? With 1442, 2001 being the key ones, right? And I also think that, IGI will be self-sustaining, right, from next year. So it's not like we won't have any exposure to innovation going forward. So even if IGI does partnerships, subsequently they do a capital raise, right, Denmark will still have exposure to IGI by way of equity. It's just that we won't need to invest more capital. That's what I believe, right, in the years to come.
And just one follow-up there, on 1342, what's the status? The trial, 1342, the trial has been stopped, right? So what's happening there?
So thank you. And I will add to what Glenn says, the opportunity to in-license a BIT protein platform. And we have the capability within IGI to create new molecules for a partner interested in building their multi-specific out of our proprietary BIT platform. Your question is about ISB1342, our CD38, CD3 T-cell engager. We decided to pause the development of this asset after we demonstrated the clinical proof of concept, the good tolerability, and also the lack of immunogenicity of this protein. And we presented the results at the ASH annual meeting last December. The reason why we paused the development of this first generation bispecific are that we already have two innovative assets in relapse refractory multiple myeloma. And in our cost efficiency model, we decided to focus on the most innovative asset and to leave this asset for licensing. So we're actively looking for partners willing to take on ISB1342 for oncology, but also non-oncology assets, indications, excuse me.
My question was on the U.S. business. So you mentioned that we are ready at Monroe and Goa for the FDA audit. We are expecting a favorable outcome, but just in case the outcome is not favorable, does it derail our plans there, and what is the plan of action in case there is unfavorable outcome?
So Monroe is a non-operational site, right? There's no commercial product being sold out of Monroe. So frankly, other than the cash that we are burning there, right, which we'll have to decide depending on how the agencies, how the inspection goes, right? Goa, is under a warning letter. We are hoping, we've done a lot of remediation, we've done tremendous amount of work. So we'll wait to see how the agency views the work that we've done.
Couple of questions I'll again squeeze in. So in line with the last question, so one question has come. What is the preparedness level on the other sites, basis the learnings that we got from Monroe and Goa?
So as I said, you know, it's been a great learning for us as an organization, right? And I think over the last 2 years, we've worked really hard in the whole, building the whole quality organization, right? Rebuilding the quality organization, right? We have a new quality leader who took over a couple of years ago. And since then, we've been transforming the whole quality organization throughout the organization. So lots of systems, lots of electronic systems that we've invested in. So all that makes us believe that, you know, the learnings we've actually, you know, that we've, whatever we've learned from Monroe, Goa, now we've, you know, implemented a lot of those changes in the other sites too. So we're much better prepared as an organization.
And on the IGI pipeline, so while we mentioned that we have the POCs coming up in FY25, is there a more specific timeline that we can give in terms of when are the, and also given the fact that we are now using some of the India sites for the trials?
Timeline, it will be the data disclosure at the first in the ASH abstract, which will be disclosed close to November, and then during the presentation in December, which will leave us even more time to continue our dose escalation, mature the data, and present a more robust data set in December at the ASH annual meeting. So I'll invite you to join us at the ASH meeting to watch those data together.
Any questions from the audience? So I have one more which just came in. So in terms of our EBITDA margins, so we've guided to a 19% EBITDA margin for FY25, which is about a 2-2.5% improvement from our last run rate, basically. So obviously this year a lot of it is coming from the optimization of R&D expenditure in IGI. But we have also said that we are in going to target 1-2% improvement. So where is that improvement going to come from in the subsequent years?
Thank you. As we already explained that, you know, Ryaltris and some of the other brands that we're going to launch, especially Ryaltris has a very good margin and it's going to grow quite fast, and we already seen it happening. So I think that would obviously help us to grow it further. And as we grow further, there'll be some economies of scale as well. And this whole, how we're working on the SG&A, we'll continue to work on that. But I think with newer markets and more respiratory products being launched everywhere, I think we're going to see some improvement because of that.
I think with the improved growth rates that we have, as we mentioned, right, our growth for the next few years will be around 12-15%. Obviously, the costs will not grow by the same rate, so we will have a much higher EBITDA growth and a much higher PAT growth. That gives us confidence that there will be a 1-2% improvement in EBITDA margin going forward on a year-on-year basis.
Any other questions from the audience? We have a few more, but I think we have answered those as a part of the discussion, so I won't probably take those up. So I think if there are no other questions from the audience, then I think we can conclude the Investor Day session today. Thank you all again for joining us and interacting with the management team. And we look forward to further interactions in the near future. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So we have...